immigration experience, of which I have none. World War One, I am too young to remember. But I can recall, according to what my mother told me, that we spoke German. And my grandfather and my grandmother immigrated from Germany. And as a little kid, that's all we spoke. Of course, that was during World War One. And from outside pressure, we gradually turned to speaking English, especially when I started school. The people just didn't like us to speak German. Of course, that which was understood. And after we got to school, then everything was English. And as green as the other person had to. In probation, I can remember times that Dad and Mother would take me to Detroit. And there was a place called E-Course where there were all sorts of wooden shacks along the river, and that was more or less the headquarters of all the gang leaders around this area. And then I can also remember one time when I was in a German class, we had a reunion out at Bowles Harbor. During the time, and I could see a boat out in the marshes. Out in the marshes, and they were unloading. But there wasn't anybody around to prevent them from doing anything. It was all exposed, right up there, you could just see them. They brought cases of whiskey in. You could just see it. And you see what they were doing. They were just piling it up there, and another boat was going to come and pick it up. And nothing was done about it. That's how open it was around this area. I suppose somebody was getting paid off or something. That's the only thing I could see. Now this other one, I don't know too much about minority groups. Do you know anything about that? What does that mean? I didn't see that one before. And the roles of women, well, there has been a radical change. As a rule, as I recall, so during that time, and of course before World War II, very few married women worked. It's just the opposite today. At that time, I will say maybe, as I recall, I bet there were over 5 to 10% of women working as married women. But today, I would say that about 80%, 80 to 90% of the women, of the married women, working. Of course, you could understand at that time we didn't have all the modern conveniences that they have today. The women at that time, the guys, I can remember the old-fashioned washing machine and all the canning that the people did at that time, and the old women folk did. And so you could understand that. I recall that that time we used to, well, most of my relatives lived in Detroit. And on Sundays they would come down in caravans. And gosh, I can recall my mother, she didn't think anything of it. Feeding maybe 15, 20 people without any planning at all. I don't know, they were always welcome, and everything was served, everybody was satisfied, everybody was fed. Well, that was one reason why, because she did so much canning. She didn't have to worry about going to a store. I tell you today, if that many people came to a house on a Sunday without any preparations, why, they would have a fit. They just wouldn't know what to do. But at that time, it just seems as if they just took it in stride. That's all there was to it. So I think the women today, they have more freedom than they did then. Of course, think today, I said washing machines, dryers, and all that stuff, and actually today it takes two to get started. It costs so much, I say, actually to get started, you think of a house and all the things that go with it, and I say it costs a lot of money. Well, a family, of course, I had a father and mother, and I had a brother and a sister. And I don't know what to say about them.
Where did you live?
We lived in Ida. That's where we started. We lived in Ida, and my grandfather was a Lutheran minister. And of course, he had to give it up shortly. Well, I think he, as I recall, he was about 45 years old, and he had to give it up because of throat ailments, which I just don't know what was wrong with him. But anyway, he gave it up then, and he bought the grist mill in Ida. And he and his sons, or three boys, they run his grist mill until he passed away. Well, of course, he wasn't very old when he passed away, because he died before I was born. My grandfather on one side and the ocean side died before I was born, and my grandmother on the step side and the mother's side died before I was born. Anyway, afterwards, after my grandfather died, well, then the three boys took it over. And they ran for a good many years. And of course, eventually they separated too. Then they finally sold the mill to the Ida co-ops. And then, of course, my dad stayed with them for a while. And the other one went work in Monroe, and the other one worked in the managed lumber yard in Detroit. And then eventually my dad got a better job. He managed an elevator up at Petersburg. And then we were up there for about three years. And then I think that changed hands too. And then he found a job in Monroe. And that's where we eventually ended up at, Monroe.
What did he do?
And he worked on a... Oh, I don't know what we would call it in Monroe. Oh, well, in Ida, he was an engineer. And he took care of the power plant down there in Bristol. It was fed steam power, steam engine. And that was his job, to take care of the source of power, the engine down there. And the other brother was a sort of a miller-like. I mean, they made flour down there, too. Wheat flour, all kinds of flour. And the third brother, he was a bookkeeper. I wish I'd have kept some of those books. Dad hadn't done the graduate, and didn't do that, and all he had was bookkeeping books, you know. And I say today, they should see some of that stuff. Honestly, what if I can remember then, the first thing I noticed when I looked at them, they were just as neat. Bookkeeping was just as neat in there, you know, everything was in its place, the lines were nice, and everything was legible. But I don't know what ever become of those books. But anyway, that's what happened, and of course eventually Grandpa died. He was burned. He died because of burns. He was burned over 80% of his body. He was working down there in the boiler room with the River Raisin. That's where he was. Well, he was in there. He was working on that too. And the flame shot out through one of the portholes. And he tried to get more cover holes. And his cover holes were greasy. And and of course, there was a vat right nearby. He jumped in that because it was too late. He was bent by his head, back, legs, you could see a lot of things. I don't know when I see them. Well, schools have changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of it, I think, boy, there at that time, schools, it just seems as if when you were in school, you were the teacher's responsibility. And if anything happened at school, I'd say if you deserved a crack, you got it. And you better watch out because you'd have got one at home, too. Because in most cases, the parents would have taken the teacher's word if there was any trouble. The teacher said so, okay, that's just the way it was. And when you got home, you got another one. If I can remember, I told you, I remember one instance in school. One fellow got a little groggy, and boy, and that teacher took him by the seat of his pants and threw him off in the hallway. That's just the way it was. I mean, that straightened him out, too.
What was that, high school?
That was in eighth grade. Teacher was a big strapper. The kid just got out of hand, that's all, and he took him. He took him, he opened that door, and out the hall, and the hallway he went. And today, if they did anything like that, boy, the parents would be up there, boy, they wanted to know what the score was. But at that time, you took the teacher's word more so than you did today. At that time, boy, the teacher said you were unruly, but you'd want to watch out, because at home you got it too.
What kind of subjects did they teach in the early school years?
Well, reading, writing, and arithmetic, of course, we didn't have all the additional subjects that they have today. But history. And I don't know, I think, I might be wrong, but I tell you, I think at that time, teachers were teachers. They were interested in teaching. What I mean is, if you wanted any help, there was never any problem. Needed any help, boy, you could stay after school. If anything, you better let her tell her that you like, you need help in something, in a certain subject. It just seems to me as if the teacher was always glad. Always glad to stay after school. I can remember one case in particular. She was my math teacher. And gosh, I said, if I needed help, sure. After school, and she would stay, my goodness, I know she'd stay as long as you wanted to stay. And she never made many bones about it either. She was always there, and always willing to help. But it seems as if most of them were like that. My goodness, you needed help after school, boy, they were there. Today it seems so many of them, boy, they're ready to leave school as soon as the students leave. Whether it's the lack of interest in the students or what, I don't know. But there was never any problem then. Well, it was up to you. You had problems and you want to spend the time, boy, they were there, they were always willing to help. This one lady in particular, she was an old timer. You could tell. Well, I had two of them. They were old ladies. Gosh, I had one in German, and one, well, she was my solid geometry and advanced algebra teacher. Those two gals were sharp. I mean, they've been teaching the subjects for so long, and it seems funny. They'd be sitting there. Both of them. Where did they, I mean, they just dozing off, eyes closed, you know, and you think, that's what they're doing. If you get anything wrong, you made a mistake, they were right there, they could just tell you. That was wrong. Well, I mean, it must have been just listening with their eyes closed. They would just sit there just like that. And you'd be reciting. That is right, supposed to be this way or that way, you know. And you think, my God, it was like possible. Churches. My granddad, of course, as I said, was a Lutheran minister. He started the church, the Idle West Church. And I wonder how many people today would do that. We would walk. I can remember we had a little two-wheel cart. Push. And I can remember we took turns riding it. We had to walk about, we lived in Ida, and went out to the Ida West Church. Of course, at that time, though, too, the roads were so bad, you couldn't take, most times couldn't take a car. So we walked. We walked on the railroad tracks, and there was a little step there with a fence in one place. And they'd go over in a lane, and lane walked, and it must have been about one of those cross fields, about a mile and a half, mile and a half, something. Mother and Daddy took turns pushing us in the coat. And we went up there to church for the longest time, and finally ended up going to church later. But we did a lot of walking, I know that. A good many a time. And of course, we had different programs, we had children's programs, and, well, Christmas. Well, those two in particular. We walked up there. We walked up there. Even during the wintertime.
Were any masses said in German?
Well, you mean the services. Services?
Yeah.
At that time, well, up to, let's see. 33, 32. Up to, I'd say, about 1925. Maybe a little bit earlier than that. Yeah, all services were held in German. Then as time went on, the less of the older ones were getting fewer and fewer all the time, and then, of course, it's the younger ones, and they said that the services should be in English. So, this is when I only had one service, well, I can remember, we had one service in German, during one service a month in German, and the rest in English. And then, as time went on, well, then I gradually eliminated the German, and it was all English. But I guess there are some churches today where they do have a service. They do have a service in German. Or to a language within, some are German, some are maybe, well, both of them predominantly German, for that, we'll say, one service in German. Automobiles, as I told you, automobiles with class and dignity. I think today the engineers, they don't know what that means. But I think back of some of the cars that I have seen, why, they have dignity. That car had dignity, I shall say. I think of the old Curacao and the Ford, Auburn Ford. And that was the, well, of course, Curacao was a Franklin, that was a Spawn. That's a Spawn Curacao. So Curacao, well, that was an aristocrat of old cars. Aristocrat, and then the Franklin was a smaller one. And just like old, the Delta, or Delta 88 and the 98. But they had, well, when you looked at that, Franklin, I know, and I said, what do you think of that? Well, Curacao, I looked at that, you got to take a second look. I wish I could describe that car. Oh, it had lights on the fender. The front end was, when you looked at that, it was a really nice looking car.
How big a role did the car play in the family?
Well, that time cars, not too much. In fact, I think, a car, when we lived in Ida, as far as a family car is concerned, I think the car we had was the most important as a family car, because most of our relations lived in Detroit. Because, now you might not believe this, we had a neighbor, and a big Overland. He ran that car, he used that car in the summertime. in the wintertime, it was jacked up. You put it in the barn, it was jacked up. It jacked, put a jack under each wheel. Didn't touch it. Didn't touch it until the next spring. Where our car was used more or less the year round, but you had to watch it. You didn't have the facilities. What I mean is, you didn't have antifreeze. Well, at that time, you didn't. Your first car didn't have a starter. You had to crank it, you know. And when the engine was cold, you had to have the engine start the thing. And of course, the transportation didn't have any heat in the car either. I can remember, I said, when we went to Detroit, it was cold. We would heat bricks. Great big robes, automobile robes, you know, blankets. Heat bricks, put them on the floor, and then put our feet on them. Keep our feet warm in the car, because we didn't have any heat. Then the next step, in the next car we had a little heat because there was a manifold heat. And the little hole in the front, the floorboard, little hole. Boy, you could look down and I'd be red hot in there. Of course, I was just a heater right from the intake from the exhaust manifold. Well, that was it. That's easy. And of course, entry. Boy, oh boy, I had to watch that. Of course, they had alcohol. Later on, they had alcohol. Before, I said, gosh, when you use the car in the wintertime, if you used it, then stop and overnight or something was cold, I'm going to drain a radiator. But afterwards, of course, they had alcohol. They used alcohol. That was antifreeze then. And of course, the car then didn't have any water pumps either. That's what they had to watch out. Boy, it would overheat. And boy, it would have been many a time, boy, I'd see the old radiator cap take that off. So I think they had problems, lots of problems. That's why some people didn't want to fool around with a car during the winter time. So I think the car automobiles have improved a lot. Well, of course, that time too, the first cars were touring. And they had side curtains. Oh, I got to put those damn things on when it was cold or when it rained, I remember what. And of course, when I saw you, you'd roll it down, you know. And, well, cars have improved a lot, that's for sure. Street cars, oh, yeah. Well, I can remember those from Monroe here. They had the car barns on the east corner of Monroe and Anna. Street car, the track went right down the center of Monroe Street, going towards Toledo. And after it got, let's see now, how was that? Outside of the city limits, then it went over to the, going towards Toledo, left side, I believe. I couldn't see for sure. It's hanging around and then run parallel with the road. But going towards Detroit, that went around, I just remember not how that was. It went down as far as, I think, down M. And it swung, I don't know, it swung around or somewhere, I believe, because then it crossed back across Riverview, that's way down. Then it hit the open space and swung around towards Detroit. Then, of course, I can remember taking rides out to the pier. They had open cars for that. And, you know, otherwise, all the cars were closed between Detroit, Toledo. You could take the streetcar to Toledo, and then Cleveland. Oh, I don't know how far you can go with the streetcar. That was one means of transportation. I think that they're sorry now that they tore everything up. It was clean transportation, and still, and it was fast transportation too. Well, I tell you, some of the streetcars really quick along. And recall, down in Ohio, we had relatives down near Hessville. Outside of Toledo, you get on the, I don't remember the highway. That was all brick. All brick, I remember, it was all brick highway. And the streetcar track ran parallel with the road. And that car, I'm telling you, boy, you'd have forced that type of a car, you couldn't rule that path. You went 25, 30, 35 miles an hour. That was fast. You were really going, but that old street car, boy, just right past you. So I imagine that street car must have been doing at that time, must have been doing 50, 60 miles an hour. And that was fast. So streetcar, I remember one time it took a mother and I were in Cincinnati. The streetcar there, my gosh, we saw the entire city. I mean, they had open cars there, they were, and my gosh, I don't know how long that ride was, but it cost me a dime. But that, I think that's right. Oh, gee, it seems like it lasted an hour and a half. We were the whole world drunk, sitting up and down those hills and pretending. Well, moving pictures. Oh, you know, we've had quite a few movies here in town. One was an old family theater right before the little ones closed up. What's that?
Denison?
Yeah, Denison. But it was up, it was a family right across the way. They had the Dixie, that was two doors north of the family theater. Then they had the Reaper. That was the Reaper Theater that was up on East Front Street, in Riverside there. And they used to have live shows in the Reaper. And the family, too. Family. And that is another thing about theaters. Vaudeville. Oh, they used to have some big time shows. Well, you can come to Monroe at Vaudeville. And organist. That's why you fellows are missing. You missed out so much. Boy, call it entertainment. Why, here in town, he used to have one of that played organ. During intermission, he would play, then you go to Detroit or Toledo and all of the Michigan Theater and the Fox. Oh, the beautiful places. With the organist, gosh, during intermission, and intermission, gosh, you. The organ was raised up there, he would be playing an organ. Boy, a big one. And then sometimes they'd have a band, and they had a stage there, well, right by the stage, in front of the stage. It was a disappearing stand where they had a good-sized band. And when intermission time come, or vaudeville time come, where that band on the stage is, not just like big band, not two or three piece, but big band. But it was just, I don't know, today I see you in a movie and all you see is a picture. That's as far as it goes. At that time you saw a picture, just think, I don't know, just for what it cost. That seemed to me it was, maybe 75 cents. But you saw a picture, you saw a movie star, you saw they had a cast there, I mean, of important people, let's put it that way. Noted vocalists. Noted musician, and what have you. But that was all there, but you saw the picture too at the same time, you know. It was just, I don't know how long it would have lasted. Well, it was 2 hours, maybe it was longer than that. But all this, until you saw why today, to see the same thing, and you went to that theater, I know darn well, you couldn't touch it. You couldn't, what you saw, all the things that you saw, all the noted celebrities, I bet you could touch it for $7-$8. It's the price of admission. It'd be more than that. Because you look how many things you did see. I mean, today, of course, you stick with a cost just to see a concert. And the building, I mean, it was something just to go to a theater. Oh, golly, and I said, like the Fox in Detroit, that was a beautiful place. The Michigan, too. And they had the Paramount in Toledo, and then of course that was tore down. But as I say, in little theaters, of course, I guess I was just like everybody else. The first 3 rows. Right down in front, farthest back I ever got, about the 3rd row. That was my limit. I like to be right down with the kids. You know, I'd be raw there about a bag of popcorn. Popcorn, 5 cents. That was one thing. I stayed 5 cents for a long time. Popcorn. I didn't count that shit for about 35, 40 cents. So, movies have changed a lot. What's that in my social life? Well, tell you one thing, we didn't depend upon cars. Damn it.